the Flushing Girl from Flushing. The nanny named Fran.
Oh, Mr. Sheffield.
Miss Fine.
Hello and welcome to another episode of Oh, Mr. Sheffield. It's a podcast about The Nanny, a hit sitcom from the 90s starring Fran Drescher. I am Sean DePasquale, and I am here with...
Toria Sheffield.
Yes, and we are here to talk to you about season 6, episode 13, The Yummy Mummy, which was written by Suzanne Myers and Cody Farley and directed returning champ Peter Mark Jacobson. Mm-hmm. Toria, what was this one about?
This is the episode where Fran becomes convinced that Brighton is ashamed of her because she's not, quote, smart or like formally educated. And also, I was going to say, have you ever heard the phrase yummy mummy before?
No, it's gross.
So I first learned it like a long time ago when I was visiting my friend in the UK, because that is like a phrase that they use there. It's like MILF. It's actually much gentler than MILF.
Interesting.
Yeah, it's like yummy mummy culture. You're like, you know, pushing your stroller in your like cute yoga pants.
Okay.
That's like when I go, damn, Daniel. But okay. So
here's the thing.
Okay.
The description of this episode completely buries the lead, because what this episode actually is two humongous moments in nanny lore. Deftly weaved into a seemingly throwaway story.
Yeah, so true. Yes,
like,
okay.
It's like, oh, this is just some random dumb app. Oh, wait. Oh, we're getting major movements on both Cece and Niles, and we're getting the reveal of, like, Fran's pregnancy and the babies. And, like, it was, like, so much happens in, like, the last half of this that I was like, oh, wait, is this the most important episode of season 6.
I know. But I will say this, even though you're calling it like a silly, dumb episode, like I loved the silliness too. Like had it just been the stuff that we saw between those big moments, I would have been like, very fun. Loved it. So I was laughing out loud at several.
I loved it just for the line, you don't want my baby to hang himself with the umbilical cord.
Oh my God, yes.
This is the darkest joke I've ever heard in my life.
Okay. Wait, let's get there. Okay, this episode begins with, so Fran and Mr. Sheffield, or I should say Fran and Maxwell now that we're all adults
Please, we're all married now.
We're all married to each other.
It's been 6 years, Toria.
In a spirit ceremony. Where Fran and Mr. Sheffield, they're at Dr. Reynolds, the OBGYN, and she starts off by being like, now, Fran, it's very normal to experience constipation and flatulence during pregnancy. And then Maxwell asks when they should stop having sex, which is like, I guess it's a reasonable question, but I was like, ew, gross, Maxwell. But anyway, and Fran goes, probably when the flatulence starts kicking in, which made me laugh. But so this is also the scene where we find out that they are going to find out the sex of the baby in a couple weeks, like they're at their next scan. Yeah. And, you know, Fran wants a girl. Mr. Sheffield seems to want a boy. And then the doctor's like, you know, you should start talking to the baby. Like, this is where they really start to recognize your voice and bond with the mother. So two hilarious things. One, as you said, very dark. Mr. Sheffield leans down to Fran's stomach and goes, hello, fetus. When you're ready, come out and meet us. And I just, I was like, this is him at his best. He's such a goober. He's such a dork. And it's so adorable.
Yeah.
And then, you know,
dorky,
like, Fran
dorky,
actually just married.
Maxwell is the best Maxwell. Like the like nerdiest, dorkiest version of him is my favorite guy.
Yes,
like, he's such a goober.
And like Fran, I love that Fran just fell in love with a big old dork at the heart of it. But then Fran starts to talk to the baby. She's like, hello. And then Dr. Reynolds goes, gentle, we don't want him to hang himself with the umbilical cord. I was so shocked by that line, but I laughed so hard.
It's a really dark joke. I mean,
yes.
My God.
It's great.
My God.
But so, okay. So we've established all that in just like the first couple minutes.
Yes.
We then cut to the kitchen back at the house, and Fran and Val are talking. It's like later that day, and she's like, oh, you know, Val, I'm just so nervous about finding out the sex of the baby in a couple weeks. Val goes, well, you know, when I have too much going on in my head, I imagine a tiny little housekeeper in my ear cleaning out my brain. And then Fran goes, yeah, you should probably cut her back to twice a week. like she cleans out way too much.
Yeah, she's dumb.
And then we kind of establish what I guess, like, as you said, is ostensibly the main plot, but it's not really the biggest points of this episode. So Brighton and Maggie come in, and we establish that Brighton is starting his college tours, and he's supposed to visit Harvard this weekend. And Val is like, oh my gosh, Fran, like, why don't you take Brighton to his Harvard visit? Like, this will definitely take your mind off everything. And Brighton's like desperately like motioning like, no, no, stop, stop. But Val definitely doesn't pick up on it. Neither does Fran. So she's literally just like, I can't wait. We're going to Harvard. And he's like basically crying.
Yeah.
Because he like clearly he like doesn't want a parental chaperone on this kind of like big weekend away. And then later that day, Fran goes to tell Maxwell that she's planning to be away for the weekend. And he's literally like, oh, of course, darling. In fact, you work too hard, but why don't you make it a long weekend? And then she's like, okay, who's coming who you don't want me to meet? Because like, this is like definitely a very like Lucy, Ricky, you know, trope in their marriage now or in their relationship. And he's like, darling, we're married now.
No, 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 Lucy, you cannot go to Club Babaloo. It's my favorite.
Oh, what a show.
Club Babaloo is the best. It's the best thing. It's the most fun thing to say. No, 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 Lucy. You cannot go to Club Babaloo.
Club Babaloo. Oh, it's okay. But he's like, darling, we're married now. I don't need to. And then he just gives and he goes, Lynn Redgrave. And Fran freaks out. Okay. And this is, so.
Oh, Did you know who this was?
Okay, no. So listen, okay. I'll just say,
because I was like, am I crazy and like forgetting some like massive celebrity of this era? Because like, I had no idea who this lady was by name. I didn't recognize her by face. I didn't recognize her voice.
Well, but here's the thing. This is what I was going to say. Listeners, we started this before the record and we both were like, well, it'll be a pretty short record. But then I was like, no, but I have a bunch of deep dives and tangents. And Sean was like, so do I. So this is my first deep dive and tangent, because Fran freaks out about Lynn Redgrave. Turns out she is part of one of the world's most famous acting dynasties. She's the daughter of Rachel Kempson and Sir Michael Redgrave. And she is sister of Vanessa Redgrave, who is incredibly famous English accent.
Oh, I know that name.
And guess what?
Yeah.
She and her sister Vanessa were nominated for Oscars the same year in 1966.
Ooh, what a scandal. And I bet you they hated each other.
Well, that has only ever happened once before in 1941. And while that seems like totally crazy, like I could not imagine it happening today, I was also like, oh, well, we have to remember like back when old Hollywood was old Hollywood, and even further back in the silent picture days, like there were like acting families. Like it was truly like a small community. So it kind of made a little more sense that like two people in the same family could be nominated the same year.
And the population was smaller. So there was only like, what, 50 people in Hollywood?
It was honestly a much, much smaller community.
That's what I'm saying. I'm exaggerating, but it was a much smaller pool of people. And I mean, there was a whole boom in the early motion picture days of people moving here to be part of the industry. So like you had a good like decade where it was just the people that lived here were like, oh, I guess we're doing this now. And then like people started flooding in from like, you know, Des Moines. And Poughkeepsie, and the third funny thing that
these were English. This is an English family, but so then and then I was really glad I did this little deep dive, because it made jokes later land way better and way harder knowing the context. So, by her own admission, she said, like in an interview, that being labeled Vanessa Redgrave's quote younger and chubbier sister. That did a few films a few years ago, didn't sit well with her. Okay. And as a result, she lost considerable weight and permanently settled in the U.S. in 1974 to distance herself from that. Because the other thing is, yes, they were both nominated for Oscars in 1966, but then very soon after that, Vanessa Redgrave's career kind of just continued like full storm ahead. Mm. And Lynn's very much dried up. So she came out in the 70s to the U.S. to kind of like get away from like the English acting scene and the film. And she settled in Southern
California. Hey, listen, it's a tale as old as time. New city, new school, right? New you. She's like, in America, my name's going to be Beatrice.
Yes.
Gred Brave.
Yes. And well, she moved to Southern California, but she regularly commuted to New York, and she became particularly notable on Broadway. Mm-hmm. And she was hired to She was prolifically hired by major networks to appear on a variety of TV talk and game shows.
Oh, my goodness.
She held a position of co-host on one of them in 1968 for a couple years. And she was also acting a lot on primetime TV and like guest spots and miniseries and short-lived TV series.
When did this become the Lynn Redgrave podcast? Am I right, folks?
Well, only because I'm gonna stop soon. I'm almost done. But her film career, though, never took off. She was in things sporadically. She was in things that like just were often flopped. And in the 80s, she actually became the spokesperson for Weight Watchers and then kind of did a more here and there after that. But this is that is like this person who Fran reacts to later in the episode. And again, I was glad I knew all this because I was like, oh, these jokes make so much more sense.
So she never had like a big – like. It sounds like, based on what you're saying, she came here to America and then she just had like a career, not like a huge, she didn't like explode.
Well, no.
Or anything like that. She just had like a good career while she was here. So is she like super famous at this point in the 90s that everyone knows who she is? Or is this like a weird Fran obscure thing?
No, I think this is like our parents who like watched movies in the 60s would know who she was. She was literally like in one of the hit movies of the decade and was nominated for an Oscar. And then her career just like never really took off, but her sister was so famous. So I think that
who is this like the modern equivalent of? Is this like Jamie Lynn Spears?
No, so much less gross. That's like unfair. That's unfair to the whole Redgrave family. No, like it's just, she is. And also think about this. Fran, and this is also why I think there's such like a fun camp following to the nanny. Like this is exactly the type of celebrity that like I think people could become fixated on where it's like, but I loved her in this and she's underappreciated. And then like, bless her heart. Then she was on Weight Watchers. Like, you know, like I'm sure like if we texted our moms, they'd be like, yeah. Like it's Vanessa Redgrave's sister.
All right. Well, let's close up the Lynn Redgrave mailbag.
Okay. I'm sorry. I had to get into
it. No. Listen, that was all important context for what's about to happen on this series.
On this series.
The whole series.
Meanwhile.
Yes.
Then Cece comes in and she starts powdering her nose in the mirror. Yes. And Niles sees her and he hits her with some zingers.
We get one of my favorite zingers that I think I've ever heard out of him. Which is Cece says, well, I'm being taken out tonight. And Niles goes, well, then I'll open the drapes so they have a cleaner shot.
Yes. And it also one of my favorite ones, which was when she's looking in the mirror, he just goes, mirror, mirror on the wall. Why must I look like Charles de Gaulle? And she is like, she's literally like, I don't have time for you. I'm being taken out tonight. Yeah. Her date comes to the door.
Oh, my God. This was a good reveal.
It was. It's a man who looks a lot like Niles. Mm-hmm. And then he also sings her like Niles. Like literally, she's like, oh, Colin, give me a minute. I'm just fixing my face. And he goes, don't bother, Angel. If Earl Schlebb can't knock those dents out, then I doubt you can. And Earl Schlebb was like a company that like dealt with like auto repair dents and stuff.
Hamina.
And she is delighted, which makes me love Cece. She literally laughs. She's like, ho, ho, ho. And then she looks at Niles and she's like, he can go on like this all night. They walk out.
Cece's a masochist.
We know that. Remember, she likes the rough side of the sponge.
I know.
But so they leave, and Niles looks out the door, watches them go, and he's clearly threatened. Aww, but then this made me laugh because sad sitcom music played. It was like, which I was like not expecting. It was like they're really like, no, this is a big deal. So I know we went on that really long Redgrave spiral, but to reground us, that all came about because Fran is taking Brighton to Harvard and Maxwell's going to meet with like Redgrave. Yes. But so now we get to Brighton and Fran at Harvard. They're at this kind of new student meet and greet in a very fancy building.
Soiree,
for sure. Mm-hmm. And Brighton's reading
through a booklet. Don't you feel like we get a lot of these scenes on this show that I thought about? That's one of my notes is I feel like there's a lot of scenes in this series that are like Fran goes to a place with a bunch of people and it's like almost always this a very similar set where it's like a bar or a social club or a reunion or a like there's a lot of those episodes and I delight every time because yes. She's funny in crowds.
Yes, yes, yes. Yeah. And always like it's always like high class, low class, which is like incredible.
Always. It's great.
Yeah. And
this really is leaning into the Lucy of it all.
Yes. But this is also where we start to get into my second tangent of the day, which is and then I'm done. Then I really am done. And this one's shorter. But
and that's the end of the episode. We're not even going to finish the recap. She's done after this. So get ready.
Brighton is he's leaving through a booklet and he's like, wow, I can't believe so many famous people went to Harvard. And he starts listing them and it's like, you know, T.S. Eliot and this and that. And then he goes, who's Fred Gwynne? And she goes, Herman Munster. Huh. And then I looked it up. Fred Gwynne, a.k.a. Herman Munster.
Yeah.
He not only went to Harvard.
He was a genius.
He became president of the Harvard Lampoon.
Yeah.
Also, he was cartoonist for them before he became president.
You might also recognize him, listeners, as the judge from My Cousin Vinny. That's like his other biggest famous thing. He's the guy who's like, the two youths. And, you know, the two youths.
Okay. And then here's a little bit of trivia that I was just like, this is so weird, but I can't not tell people. So he died at his home in Maryland of pancreatic cancer when he was almost like 67. He's buried in an unmarked grave in the local cemetery.
Mm.
Isn't that crazy?
Spooky.
Like, why? And you're kind of like, I wonder why he wanted that. Like, I think that's so interesting.
Maybe because he didn't – I mean, he was a very famous guy, so maybe he just didn't want people to know where he's at, you know?
I mean, but
like, come bother him. His family probably knows, but –
Yeah,
he didn't want like visitors, like we're, especially because right. He was on like a like he was on the Munsters and the cemeteries and tombstones and you know what I mean. Like he probably had a lot of weirdos.
You're right.
So I bet you that was like he's like, look, just put me in an unmarked grave in Maryland where my family knows where to find me and everyone else leaves me the frick alone. People get weird, you know. They put like weird like Munster memorabilia on his grave and shit. Maybe he just didn't want any of that stuff.
Yeah, and I wonder why he ended up in Maryland. It was all interesting, but okay. So,
all right.
We then are back at this soiree and, you know, Brighton's talking to some other kids and Fran's kind of walking around and this man comes over and introduces himself to her. He's kind of like an older guy and he's like, hello, like I'm Dean Starrett. She's like, do you know you're the fourth person named Dean I've met today? Which is such a silly line. And she starts talking to him, you know, kind of like talking Brighton up and saying how like, you know, he's such a great kid and everyone loves him. But in the background, we see that while he's talking to these other guys, one of them says something like kind of lewd about Fran, you know, sort of like, ooh, like look at that hot stuff. And at first Brighton's like, oh, like that blonde, like pointing to a girl their age. And the guy's like, no, the brunette. So while Fran is talking to this, you know, esteemed Harvard dean, Brighton is clearly like getting into it with this other guy in the back and they're like almost shoving each other.
Yeah.
And then I think Brighton even like does shove him a little and is just like, you know, like shut your mouth.
Yes.
And it's like an awkward moment. And then Fran like, you know, tries to like basically lead the dean away to like divert attention from what's happening because it obviously reflects really badly on Brighton. Mm-hmm. And then later that week, Fran's in the kitchen with Sylvia, who looks fabulous. And she's telling Sylvia that the Harvard trip was like kind of a disaster. She's like, Brighton got into a fight with some other kids and he like won't tell me a thing about it.
Toria, I got to talk about how hydration is very important. I learned this recently. Hydration's not just for like running marathons and exercising and that. You need to be hydrated daily. It's daily maintenance, right? So if you're going to the airport or standing on the sidelines of your kid's soccer game in the hot sun, if you're on back-to-back conference calls, it doesn't matter. Right? Proper functional hydration is essential. And Liquid IV is the number one powered hydration brand in America. Their hydration multiplier is the one product that you're missing in your daily life. Well, maybe not you, Toria.
It's true. I actually use Liquid IV. I've used it for probably almost 2 years now. It comes in so many yummy flavors. It's a little powder that you put in the water you're already going to drink. It comes in strawberry, lemonade, grape, lemon lime, pina colada, watermelon, so much more. It makes you feel so much better, so much faster when you need to hydrate.
And with just one stick of this stuff, you hydrate real life 2 times faster than water alone. So just quit wasting your time with water. It's for losers. It's a loser's game. Plus, you get essential vitamins like B3, B5, B6, B12, vitamin C, three times the electrolytes of any leading sport drink made with quality ingredients, non-GMO, and free from gluten, dairy, soy. Plus, this company, they want equitable access to clean and abundant water for everybody. And to date, Liquid IV has donated over 39 million servings in 50 plus countries around the world. So, Toria, how do we get this stuff?
So it's real people, real flavors, real hydration. Get 20% off when you go to liquidiv.com and use your code OhMrChefPod at checkout. That's 20% off anything you order when you shop Better Hydration today using promo code OhMrChefPod at liquidiv.com.
Use it now.
Oh, and this is probably maybe my favorite line of the episode after the umbilical cord one, where Sylvia's like, well, you know, when you were that age and I used to ask you personal questions, you wouldn't tell me a thing. And then Fran's like, well, what did you do? And she goes, nothing. To be honest, I wasn't all that interested. Such a good line from a mother.
Such a great line.
Yes. It's just was like so funny on a very specific level. Like,
yeah.
Oh, yeah. Like you're asking your kid how their day was.
But who really cares? What are they going to say?
Uh-huh.
They went to school. They talked to their friends.
and then Brighton comes in and he tells Fran that he doesn't want to hurt her feelings, but he doesn't want her to come on school visits with him anymore. And she's like, well, why? And he's like, well, because the guy said something about you. And she's like, well, what would they say? And he's like, I don't want to talk about it. It's embarrassing. Okay. And then he runs away up the stairs. Like a parody of someone running away up the stairs in a sitcom. Normally he's never like that, but
he was like, very funny.
I don't want to talk about it. It's embarrassing. And then he like kind of flops up and down, and like runs off. But Fran is devastated because she is assuming that she must have said something stupid without realizing it, or like revealed herself to be super uneducated, and that that's why he's embarrassed or ashamed.
Yeah.
And we cut to several days later, and she's
literally—
But that's
not what happened.
That's not what happened. Fran is trying to smarten herself up by reading some encyclopedias, but then she realizes they were written in the 70s because a lot of the information is outdated.
So encyclopedias were like printed version of Wikipedia, but you had to have like 50 of them because, you know, you had to fit a bunch of stuff in, and it was far more limited than Wikipedia and had far less stuff in it. Yeah. I'm just explaining for our younger,
audience. I mean,
and then for a while we really like got into the future where you had Encyclopedia Britannica CD-ROMs, instead of having all the books, you could just put a CD in your computer, and then it had like the encyclopedia on that. Still not as much information as Wikipedia, but you know,
that was the most you could know. What
that was
had
it?
In your house.
That was the maximum you were allowed to know
about
the world. It's crazy when you think about it.
Sometimes I think I'm like, especially our generation, we're the true generation that was pre-internet and like have real memories of living that life, and then also post, because a lot of them like don't have the pre-memories anymore.
Yeah, we're the Oregon Trail generation.
Yeah, but like I just think about it. I'm like, I can't believe our brains are not completely broken, because we are operating in a world that we were, our minds were completely not wired to deal with.
Well, we like grew with that world, you know? I look at it more as like we benefit, like we're better off than our parents, because our parents had to just like figure, like shit just happened around them and they were already well set in their ways. And we like got to learn about the internet as we were growing up, because the internet was growing up with us, you know?
Yeah, that's true. That's true.
We were there. Yeah, we were there for like the beginning. Like by the time like AOL came around, my mom was already like 45. She was like, I don't know what this is, you know? Like she was only a couple years older than I was when TikTok started. And I was like, I don't know what this is.
That's so true. So then the doorbell rings.
Yes.
And it is Lynn Redgrave, who
Hooray.
We now all know.
Now we know
all
who she is.
And Fran leads her in. She's like completely excited and starstruck. And when you're like, oh, well, why would Fran be so excited? Like, Fran's also the person that gets over the moon about like random soap celebrities, you know?
True.
She's
Very
like a celebrity.
True. Yeah, and listen, Miss Redgrave here has great comedic timing. I had no idea who she was. She's very, very funny though, and she's like game. Like there's a line where she goes, "Class is something you're born with. Whiz me," and Fran's base cheese whiz in her mouth, and it's like a great moment. Like
yes, and so well, Fran leads her in, and they're in the living room, and Fran's starting to make small talk, but then plops herself down on the same armchair that Lynn Redgrave's sitting at and starts to go, you know, I've had a pretty stressful week. You know, I was taking my son to colleges and then it turns out I embarrassed him because I'm stupid. And she starts sobbing into Lynn Redgrave's shoulder. And then there's this like funny continued joke that happens throughout this scene and later scenes where Lynn Redgrave initially tries to like wriggle away, but then Fran will compliment her on some of her past work. And then she'll instantly light up and go, there, lean on Lynn's shoulder. Because Fran will be like, I loved you. And like, blah, blah, blah. Or like, I thought you were incredible and blah, blah, blah. And the joke being that Lynn Redgrave is so desperate and hungry to be recognized, like, yes, and be like esteemed in the eyes of the world, being Vanessa Redgrave's little sister, that like that's all you have to say to her, and she'll like be like, "Oh, we're best friends now," which is like you have to have a very good sense of humor about yourself, yes, to do so much of what she did in this episode, and that's why I'm like I'm glad I did the deep dive, because I would. That would have gone completely unrecognized and unappreciated by me if I didn't.
It did for me. I mean, I still liked her performance, but I didn't get the bit. So that helps a lot. But yeah.
Yes. Because at first you're just like, oh, she's just maybe like an egomaniac. And the joke is actually like way more self-deprecating and self-aware.
Yeah. It's great.
And so then later in the kitchen, Niles is sitting face down at the table, still in his pajamas, even though it's like later in the day. And Mr. Sheffield comes in and sees him, and he like accuses him of being jealous of Cece's new boyfriend because like Niles is absolutely miserable and depressed. And then this is the big thing you were talking about.
Oh,
Niles outright admits it. Like, yes, of course I do. But
He admitted it. He just said it. Mm-hmm. He's like, I love her. I'm in love with her.
He doesn't say
I love her, but we know what's going on here.
Mm-hmm.
Crazy.
And then he goes, this is also where I love Mr. Sheffield and Niles' dynamic. Niles goes, I have no reason to live. You should just fire me. And then Mr. Sheffield's like, oh, look, why would I fire you, old man? And then Niles goes, because Lynn Redgrave got here an hour ago and I forgot to tell you. And Mr. Sheffield goes, well, see, you do have a reason to live. And Niles is like, why? And he goes, because you're going to have to look for another job. And like runs out. Like, it doesn't matter that his like trusted friend, lifelong friend is like literally like completely depressed. He'll scream at him and run out anyway. And then we go back into the living room. Fran and Lynn Redgrave are actually getting drunk together. They're on the couch eating cheese whiz. And, you know, Fran is like asking her, like, how can I be classy? Give me some tips. And then that's when she's like, Lynn Redgrave's like, the thing is, like, you can't fake class. And then she's like, whiz me. And then Maxwell comes in and he's like, ah, and he like ushers Lynn Redgrave out into the office. But before he leaves to go in, Fran takes him aside and is just like, I'm just so upset. I think Brighton is ashamed of me because I'm not smart. And this, you know, to Mr. Sheffield's credit, it was so cute. He's like, what? He's like, that's not true. Like, when I have a problem, who's the first person I run to? And she's like, Niles. And he's like, but who's the second? And she's like, me, which is very funny. And he's like, that's right. And he's like, and you have the kind of smarts that they don't teach in school. You're intuitive and you're insightful. And who could possibly be ashamed of you? And like they hug and embrace. And then he turns to walk into his office and he goes, don't come in here. Loved it. And then... So then in the next scene, Niles is, he's in the living room. He's holding a bouquet of flowers and he's practicing what he's about to say to Cece. Kind of like, he's like, I need to get something off my chest or I need to do this. And he's like, kind of like going back and forth. But then she walks in and reveals that she just got dumped. So he instantly pivots, even though he was just about to tell her how he feels. And he like just pretends he was just going to insult her. But she looks him up and down. She's like, you're wearing your fancy pants and you're holding flowers. You have a crush on somebody. Tell me who it is. And then Lynn Redgrave walks out and he, desperate to like wiggle out of this situation, runs over to her and he's like, quick, pretend you're my girlfriend. And she's like, I'll do nothing of the sort. And then he goes, I love doing Georgie girl. And she's like, oh, rest your head on Lenny's shoulder. And like walked out arm in arm with him. Oh, also, Cece, she was wearing an all red ensemble. I feel like we only usually see her in black. And it was kind of refreshing and fun.
She looked great.
Mm-hmm.
Truly
looked incredible.
Great.
We cut to later in the week. Fran, and we're starting to wrap things up.
Yep.
Fran intercepts Brighton at the front entrance and is like, you know, we need to talk about what's going on. Like, what happened? And he finally reveals that the guys said something like gross and lewd about her. And that's what this all was about. It never had anything to do with being ashamed of her, thinking she wasn't smart. And he's like, where would you even get that idea? And then Cece walks by and Fran's like, from her. And then she like marches after Cece. She's like, for your information, I just found out I'm not stupid. I am sexy. And then Cece's like, Nanny, fine, don't sell yourself short. You're both. And then Fran's like, you know, I'm smart enough to know when I've been insulted and sexy enough not to care. And she walks away. Then we cut to this last scene, and I wrote this. I was like, do you think this was not a big enough deal in the context of the information that gets revealed?
Yes.
Fran and Maxwell.
It felt very undersold.
Yes. They're back at Dr. Reynolds. She's doing that ultrasound.
Yes.
And they find out that they are having twins.
Twins. A boy and a girl.
A boy and a girl. And like, they were just like, ah, twins. Don't you think you would be like, your jaw would hit the floor. You would be in shock. It would be like.
I mean, maybe we're getting an episode of that and we're just like jumping the gun. But yes, I would think if I was going to introduce the idea of twins, that's its own episode. And one of them's got to be really excited and the other one's got to be maybe a little like anxious. But listen, maybe this is why we're not successful because maybe that's too obvious. Mm-hmm, I don't know. We'll see. Mm-hmm. We'll see what happens. Well, I will say this. It did lead to one of my favorite jokes in the show, though, which is the right before she says it's the feet.
Oh, yes. Where when the ultrasound starts, Dr. Reynolds is like, Fran, I'm seeing 4 feet. And then she's like, how am I going to catch him when he's bad? She thinks the baby has more feet.
It's so good. So dumb.
But it's also nice because they eat, you know, one of them on a boy, one of them on a girl. They're getting one of each. And actually, when they see the boy, it's revealed that he seems to have a big penis. And Mr. Chevy goes, that's my boy. Mm-hmm. And the doctor goes, and a girl. Ooh, looks like we have a chubster on our hands. And Fran goes, that's my girl. Calling a baby a chubster in the womb.
It's a weird, the Maxwell thing is such a weird.
I know. Thing. And you know, I don't think you could see that. Really.
I'm like very excited to have children and like, but never once have I been like, hope my newborn son's got a beefy hog. Like, who cares? What is happening? Who cares? It's a baby. What? So weird.
Well, okay. So they find out they're having twins, and then the button of the episode. I love this. Mm-hmm. Fran is daydreaming, and she's like, "What am I gonna do with 5 children?" Which goes to her extended fantasy scene of she basically leads a Partridge Family band.
Yes,
and there's like, I was like, "Come on, get happy." And like, you know, Brighton and Nagy and Gracie are in there. There's these two like little twins. One's on drums. One's on guitar. Fran's leading them in like a short blonde wig. And I wrote, give it up for Maggie. She is really selling this. Like, if you go back and rewatch of all the kids, she is going for it.
You know, this made me think, I went down so many. This was one of my tangents where I was like, man, this is such an old reference, the Partridge Family. Like, down to, like, they're all dressed in 70s clothing, right? Which feels even older now. But also it made me go, like, we don't get, like, Partridge Families anymore. But then I thought, oh, wait, we do. The nude Partridge Family is like the influencer families.
Are they dancing and singing?
They like dance. Yeah, they do videos. You know what I mean? It's like the families that get famous for being like families on YouTube or whatever. Like that is what our modern equivalent of like the traveling family band is. It's very, very interesting. Yes.
Well, and just like with anything, we always talk about this. There are now like infinite channels and streamings and influencers and this and that. Not that long ago, there was like 10 channels and we all watched the same thing. The whole of America watched the same thing. And like maybe you were more into like this, 30-minute comedy than this other 30-minute comedy. But like having a Partridge Family like had so much cultural significance because everyone watched it. Now there's a million things happening in this moment that I have no idea who anybody is. And it's not that I'm not consuming things and watching things and have fandoms of my own things. There's just so much stuff.
Yeah. Yeah.
But so
this was a great episode.
It was a great episode.
Yeah. I liked it. I'm very excited to get into my second favorite part of the show, which is
segments.
And now segments.
Are we ready for segments?
We are so ready for segments. Let's go. All right. So segment time. Segments.
Mm-hmm. Should we move on to our segments? Should we get into our segments? Segments with Sean and Toria.
Hold on. I got to finish smoking my blunt. That was the trap. I call it segments trap.
Wow.
Yeah.
We're so cool in that one.
I wish if any of our listeners raps, feel free to rap over that one. That would be fantastic.
Oh my God.
I would love that. Okay. So let's get into segments because I'm very busy these days and my life is spiraling out of control rapidly. So any time in between things that I have to do is precious. So
Don't tell the listeners that. That makes it sound like you don't want to be here.
No. I just love the time in between the things that I'm doing. I love the things I'm doing.
Yeah,
but
I'm
then also the time.
Okay. Favorite lines and moments. Tell me.
Okay. I said a lot of mine. One that I liked was when Lynn Redgrave says, did you think I was better than Bette Davis? I like that without even having much context. I just like people. I like rivalries between celebrities is very fun. We already said the umbilical cord episode line. Amazing. I also liked, I think it was Sylvia, is when Brighton doesn't want Fran to go to college. Maybe it's Fran says it, but someone goes, "Oh, look at his face. He's crying." And the way he said it was like so demoralizing. Oh, look at his face. He's crying. He's a grown man. I thought that was so good.
So I said a ton of mine, but one that I didn't say is Fran is like, she's talking about, she's like, "I don't care if the baby's a boy or a girl, as long as he can wear this adorable dress." And Fran's like, and Val's like, "I thought you didn't care if it's a boy or a girl." And she goes, "He can work it out in therapy."
On those same lines, I really liked at the end, Maxwell, the OBGYN goes, "So do you want to know the child's sex?" And Maxwell goes, "Yes, my wife's decided that I do want to know."
Yes. And I love the give him a clean shot.
Yep.
At the Drake's Taking Me Out line, like all that stuff.
Okay.
Then nanny trivia.
Tell me.
A little nanny in the news. This is just kind of fun. So, I mean, well, as everyone will know by now.
Nanny in the news.
Yes. As everybody will know by now, the strike is over. Fran Drescher did an incredible job, leading the troops and just tirelessly. And so this is just kind of fun. So on Fran Drescher's official page from about 4 days ago on Instagram, she writes, the headline was like SAG after reaches tentative agreement with studios. It was like the Hollywood Reporter. And she writes, "We did it. The $1 billion+ deal, 3 times the last contract. New ground was broke everywhere. Thank you, SAG-AFTRA members, for hanging in and holding out for this historic deal. Thank you, NEGCOM, strike captain staff, Duncan and Ray, our lawyers, AI team, etc." And then she's like, "For your unrelenting support." And then so she says that. And then I noticed top commenter Charles Shaughnessy said, "Like I've always said, a force of nature. Congratulations to everyone who worked so tirelessly, determinedly." Oh, shoot. You know what? I realized I took a screen grab of it, but it means I can't. Let me go back to it. Hold on. I'm going to go back to it.
Well, while Toria does that, I will say I'm very excited that the strike is over. I'm very excited everybody got what they want. I feel bad for our friends in the DGA who took the first and quickest and earliest deal they were offered and didn't go on strike and probably now feel like, maybe we could have gotten more had we just shown some solidarity. But hey, listen, there's always next, there's always 3 years from now, DGA.
Okay.
And when you go on strike, we'll all get your back as well. Toria, what did you find?
So, like I've always said, a force of nature. Congratulations to everyone who worked so tirelessly and determinedly to see our professional futures endured. I'm so proud, but hardly surprised by our fearless leader, Hearts. So that's what Mr. Shelfield himself said to Fran. And then if you look at the comments to that, this is just funny. Literally, someone goes, OMG, hi, Mr. Sheffield. And then someone else writes, Mr. Sheffield. And someone wrote, Nanny Fine came through. She's fabulous. So like there's a little nanny community popping up on Fran's WGA announcement.
That's why Fred Gwynn has an unmarked grave.
Yes.
You just answered your own question.
But
that's very cute.
Yeah.
I love that. I love that. That's very cute. It's cute that everyone still shows support for one another. Fran truly did a remarkable job. She really led a very tough strike, and she kept everyone's spirits up, and she kept people out there marching all the way 100 plus days. So congratulations. And now that she's got all this extra free time, she is more than welcome to come on our show. We would love to talk to her about all of her SAG-AFTRA accomplishments and all of her nanny accomplishments and anything else she wants to talk about. I'm putting it out there in the universe.
Mm-hmm.
Come on, Fran.
And then,
don't do us dirty.
Fran or the CC.
We're Jewish.
Fran or the CC.
Okay. Who are you?
I was waiting for you.
Oh.
I felt like I was the Niles because I'm so jealous, but I've also been jealous for people that I've never even expressed my feelings for. So I wrote, don't be like Toria, folks. Be vulnerable. You know, be honest. Put yourself out there.
You know, I didn't really have one at the beginning. I didn't really have one at the beginning of this, but now I think I'm Lynn Redgrave because I'm always desperate for relevance.
Oh. Mm-hmm.
And I'm not above self-deprecation.
That's true.
Thank you.
My friend Sean, he's a regular Lynn Redgrave.
All right. Well, on that note, I want to remind people to like and subscribe and leave a little comment on Spotify or Apple Podcasts, whatever you do, wherever you do, wherever you go. I've recently started using Pocket Casts. They are not promoting this show. I just highly recommend using it because I really like their interface. So wherever you go, leave a review, find us on Instagram, find us on Twitter at @OMrChefPod, find Toria out in the wild. She just roams around this country, mm-hmm. Helping people from town to town, sort of like Bruce Banner in The Incredible Hulk. And I'm around also, and we've got merch at omrchefpod.redbubble.com. Some people bought some stuff this weekend, so thank you for that. And other things. So we will be back next week for season six, episode 14. And we're almost done with the whole show, Toria. I'm getting depressed as we get closer to the end. It's making me sad.
Oh, I know.
What is it all for? Is this our legacy?
It might be. Okay. On that note, we'll see everybody next week.
Goodbye. And now, segments.
Are we ready for segments?
We are so ready for segments. Let's go. All right. So, segment time.
Mm-hmm. Should we move on to our segments? Should we get into our segments? Segments with Sean and Toria.
The Flashing Girl from Flushing, the nanny named Fran.
Oh, Mr. Sheffield.
I go, Miss Fine.